He's Jim Brady. I am Marjorie Egan. Welcome to hour number two of Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. By the way, I just want to mention, you just heard on the news that Robel Philippos of Cambridge, he was just convicted of two counts of lying to the FBI involving what he saw and did following the Marathon bombing. He was at Southeastern Massachusetts University with the alleged bomber, Yohar Tsarnaev. He's going to be sentenced January 29th. We're going to talk about this. I think for a lot of people, the conviction was not that much of a surprise. He's facing 16 years. We'll see what he's going to get, and we'll talk about it tomorrow with our Homeland Security expert, Juliette Kayyem.
And in the interim, joining us as he does every month to take our questions and yours is the Boston Police Commissioner, Bill Evans. Commissioner Evans, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you.
You know, speaking of this, we didn't even intend to get into this with you, but in light of the fact that there was a conviction after, what, 5 days of deliberations or something? I don't know if you saw Yvonne Abraham's column in The Globe where she said, you know, this could be your kid, this could be my kid kind of thing. Now that he's guilty, there'll be sentencing. What do you think should happen to this young man?
Well, I think obviously, you know, the marathon was such a tragedy. I think obviously there should be some punishment involved here. They basically try to cover up some key evidence to the case. And so, I think honestly there needs to be some punishment. That being said, I have kids that age and they make stupid decisions and maybe not realize how big a role they might have played in this whole investigation. So I sort of, as a father, I feel a little bit for them because I don't think they really realized the ramifications of the actions they were taking. But that being said, you know, I think there has to be some punishment because of their role in trying to cover up some
evidence. Does some punishment mean jail?
I think it's going to have to because, you know, with terrorism now, I think the country has to take such a firm stand that any type of behavior that can be tied to such a tragic event, there has to be some punishment imposed.
But I would assume you're talking not 16 years, which is the maximum he faces.
No, I don't think so. I hope those kids learn their lesson. And, as a father and someone who has a child in college, obviously, I think there has to be some strict punishment, but I don't know if it has to be 16 years.
Okay, well, get back to the local Boston Police Department. You made some history with a recent appointment on the police department. Tell people about it.
This is your Muslim captain.
I've had the pleasure of working with Lieutenant Hussein, now Captain Hussein, for 26 years. You know, he's been a great worker, hard worker. You know, he got promoted back to sergeant in 1992, and then in 2004, he became one of our lieutenants. So, you know, it adds a lot of great diversity to our department. You know, when I came on board, one of the first things myself and Mayor Walsh did was really diversify my command staff to the point it's 50-50 now. And now, for the first time ever, we have three minority captains in the district running district stations. You know, I know there was always been a lot of complaints. It was all an all-male white club doing it. So it just moves towards me and Mayor Walsh's commitment to diversify that our department at all the ranks.
Do you get any reaction? I mean, obviously that's what people in the community you're serving want.
Right.
Do you see reaction in a tangible way? Do people say things to you about this, or it's just your sense that this is the right thing to do and it'll produce results down the line?
Well, we're getting a lot of positive feedback. You know, my command staff out there is doing a great job. We're in the minority communities a lot, especially, you know, surrounding issues around violence, and they're thrilled that we're diversifying the department and we reflect, you know, basically the demographics of the city. So, you know, and I think, you know, with the recent racial profiling and the ACL reports, I think you're seeing that a lot of the community members rallied to our support and really came out strongly to say, hey, the Boston Police Department is not Ferguson by any means, not even close. The Herald ran a nice editorial, Adrian Walken, you know, we got a lot of community support because of the job we do day in and day out. And we work hard to build great relationships with our minority communities. And I think diversifying at all levels, even at the lowest levels, proves our commitment to being part of the community.
That's the voice of the Boston Police Commissioner, Bill Evans. And by the way, we forgot to tell you, he is here to talk to you as well. Our number is 877-301-8970. If you have a question or a comment for the commissioner, he'll be with us for the next 20 minutes or so. You brought up the ACLU report. I don't know you well, but I get the sense you're an incredibly calm level guy. I also got the sense that you were angry about this thing. And was it... It seems to me from afar, now you'll correct me if I'm wrong, you were not denying, were you, that in the 2007-2010, which preceded you, obviously, on which this data was based, that there had been some racial disparity. Was it the word racial bias that was used in the ACLU report that upset you particularly? Was that what it was, Commissioner?
It did, Jim. And what bothered me is we were working very closely on the ACLU on this report. Mm-hmm. We recognize we're not perfect, and we had some issues that we had to deal with. But it was the manner it was put out. You know, we had asked them together, let's release this to the media together. Let's go out in the community to release it together. But despite our work to try to do that, they put it out one morning quickly without us knowing about it, all slanted sort of towards in their direction. You know, they didn't bring out the full context of the report.
What they miss?
What they missed is we don't have a stop and frisk policy. Of the 200,000 stops we did out there, 25% of them were just observations where we seen kids hanging on the corner, we rode by, we document that. These are intelligence reports. They're not stop and frisk reports. Only in 40% of any of our interactions was there even a frisk. You know, all these stops were done in high violent areas, mostly on known gang violent kids. And that's why year to date we have 951 guns off the street. But these were clearly targeted players in the areas that the community wants us. We put a ton of cops into those areas. And of course we're going to have more interactions, but they portrayed it like every one of these kids was stopped and frisked, and that just didn't happen. You know, there was only a 12% disparity in stopping African-American young kids. But if the way they put out that report, black, brown, and targeted, was very inflammatory, and it's not reflective of our department. And that's why I was upset.
And that's the title of the report that you just listed, by the way, Commissioner Evans.
When you do stop these kids that you think might be players and might be involved in a gang, what does that mean? You stop them and chat or ask, what are you doing? Or
We do a lot of things. A lot of it positive. You know, the gang kids know our gang unit. They know our cops. And so we talk to them. And, Marjorie, that's the way that we build our intelligence. So if we see, let's say Joe Smith on the corner, and we see him with four kids that we know, we document that without even talking to the kids. So if there's a shooting an hour later, we can go back and say, hey, we seen him with Joe Smith, these kids. So that's the way we build up who's hanging with who. But a lot of these stops, in 25% of them, there was not even any interaction. You know, okay. Only in 40% of these cases was there even a pat down. And even to go into a pat-down, we have to articulate why we do that, because we believe the kid might have guns. But this was no way portrayed in the way. And I was a little disappointed in the ACLU because, they sort of put it out without the context of the violence. You know, Anthony Braga, Jeffrey Fagan, the one who blew up New York, they clearly said there's nothing to indicate biased in this report.
Those are the two researchers who did the report. I should say.
And they hired Jeffrey Fagan in New York, who blew up New York, and he clearly said there was nothing to indicate biased in Boston.
But when this report came out, we're going to get to your calls in about a minute here. It's 877-301-8970, by the way. When this report, we asked you last month prior to the report if you were contemplating these body cameras that are happening in a number of cities around the country. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think you said we're looking at it. We haven't made a decision. When the report came out, one of the things I read, I think it was in the Herald, is that you are seriously thinking about this. Is this something that's going to happen? And explain what a body camera is for those who don't know,
well,
Commissioner.
A body camera is something that an officer can wear on his outer garment that basically videotapes all his interactions out there. And, you know, I think our department does a great job at community policing, but it seems to be the way the whole country's going, getting them. You know, but there's also a lot of issues, and it's not a quick fix because, although the argument for it is accountability and transparency and improving internal policies, but there's issues around the cost. There's issue around privacy. If you go into someone's house, You know, is there an expectation of privacy? Do you keep the camera on? You know, so there's a lot of issues that no court has really given a decision across the country on, you know, what's admissible, what's not. So, you know, we'll look at it. If we think it's feasible, we're going to move in that direction. You know, I know there's a lot of positive feedback from departments that have it, but, you know, I made a commitment to the ACLU that it's something that I would look at. And I'll look at releasing the data on a yearly basis. And what disappointed me is, you know, they sort of went ahead without us working together. And we had a great relationship up until the point. I think they want to make a point because the weekend leading into this was a big Ferguson weekend to do marches across the country. And I think they wanted to sort of get it out before that weekend.
We're talking with Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans. Our number is 877-301-8971. Want to take some calls, Commissioner?
Sure.
We have someone from Boston, actually. Reverend Jason is calling right now. I think he's reacting to some of this ACLU stuff. Go ahead, Reverend. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Specifically, Commissioner, I wanted to ask, I heard you say that there are Black community leaders who are coming out in support of the Boston Police Department, and I know I've seen that. But my question is, I have been at all of these rallies with young people, and there are young Black and brown people in our city who are saying that your police are stopping them up to 50 times, that they are being harassed, that they are having, you know, their bodies touched. And I would suggest that, you know, when someone's having a hand of a police officer up in their crotch, that that's actually becoming, you know, these are sexual assaults that are being used. So how are you responding to these young Black and brown folks who are speaking up and saying that your police are harassing them in their communities every day?
We got it, Reverend. How about
well,
it, Commissioner?
Well, Reverend, can I say I'm not hearing those complaints? You know, we had a meeting last week after this report went out. I had clergy, well-known clergy, Reverend Rivers, Reverend Mark Scott, the whole clergy, and they told me they're not hearing these complaints. So, you know, I've been a commissioner for a year. I was a superintendent for 4 years. If there's complaints, you know, we're not receiving those complaints. Am I saying we're not stopping the same gang kids over and over? We are. That's our job. These kids carry guns. We know they carry guns. And, you know, what this report said that basically, 40% of our FIOs are the same 5% of kids throughout the city. So the kids we continually are stopping are kids that we've gotten with guns, they're involved in the violence, and, you know, our only mission out in the community in taking these tactics that we do is to prevent young kids from being shot, and mothers have to suffer, you know, the terrible tragedy of losing a loved one. So this has been an effective tool. And we don't do it unless, you know, there's articulable facts to make us want to pat down somebody.
Reverend Jason, thank you much for the call. Your boss, the mayor, is going to be with us on Friday, so he'll get to speak for himself. But what was his reaction? I mean, I read his quotes. What was his reaction to obviously, neither he wasn't mayor. You weren't the commissioner, even though you were in the department. What was his reaction?
Well, like me, I don't think we're perfect, Jim. I think we have work to do. And if there's an 8% disparity, you know, we're going to work, you know.
Do you think race, I mean, but if I can, Commissioner, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I understand you say that both the drafters of the report, the researchers, concluded that it doesn't demonstrate bias, it does demonstrate disparity. Are you saying 100% of the disparity, and I know this is 2007 to 2010, was a function of the communities and individuals you're focused on because of their histories, or that some of it was a function of the color of somebody's skin?
Well, again, the study has said 8%. When you take into crime, into the all the factors, 8% is unexplained. Mm-hmm. Well, the bias involved.
8% of Blacks more likely, higher than whites being stopped.
Right. We have no explanation. That being said, they don't know whether bias played a factor in that. All I can say is, Jim, since this study started, we've gone down 10,000 FIOs a year. Arrests have gone down tremendously, and crime continues to go down. So unlike New York, whose FIOs are going up, and the arrests going, we're doing this less and less. And so our numbers show that we're trending in the right direction as far as using these tools. And I think the community policing and the job the officers do out there, working day in and day out with the kids in the schools, in the community, is paying off.
We're talking with Boston Police Commissioner William Evans. We're taking your calls at 877-301-8970. Michael's on the phone from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Michael.
Hey, how you doing? How are you, Commissioner?
How are you, Michael?
I noticed on that study, it kept being repeated, they were comparing the number of incidents compared to the percentage of the minority population in Boston, which is a completely bogus statistic. But the one to flush out is comparing it to the number of incidents in the area in which it's occurring. However, like a lot of Americans, I'm sick of the war on drugs, to be frank. And I would like some, you know, like little petty things enforced. Sal LaMattina passed a bill a few years ago, an ordinance a few years ago on motorcycle noise. Still, I can't walk down the street without getting my ears split open by motorcycles all summer. And not only do the police not enforce it, they actually lead these groups of motorcycles. I saw the Boston Police Motorcycle Unit leading about 200 motorcyclists through the city, many of whom were clearly in violation of the ordinance. You know, the whole... You're not just there to enforce the drug laws. You're there to enforce the quality of life for the people of Boston.
We got it. I think the commissioner gets your point.
Had it with the motorcycle.
Okay, so let the commissioner respond.
Michael, let me tell you, you know, when I came on board, that was one of the big issues. And I think Scott Lehi from the Globe wrote an article on how he had complained in the past and we only had 3 violations. You know, I put a couple of officers into the auto task force, and we've really been targeting problem areas with the motorcycles. Newberry Street, we've rode a lot of violations. Another area is the North End on Hanover Street. I think we have about at least 150 violations over the course of the summer. So, you know, if there's an area in East Boston that we need to address, please reach out to Captain Kelly McCormick, and we'll get them down there to monitor the motorcycle traffic. But I know it's an important quality of life issue, and, you know, but we have really tried, especially in the areas where we've gotten complaints, and that's Newberry Street, Hanover Street. We went from 3 violations last year, and I think we're almost up around 200. So we're trying our best. Let us know a street or a location, and we'll gladly address it.
Michael, thank you much for the call. We appreciate it.
You know, I want to mention on a lighter note here.
I knew you would,
Marjorie. Pictures of the week is this adorable little. Did you pronounce it? You were a big Breaking Bad fan, was it?
Tuco.
Tuco, the named after a drug dealer in Breaking Bad. I don't know why it's named after a drug dealer. Tuco.
Tuco.
Thank you very much. Anyway, little Tuco is this adorable little German Shepherd puppy that's in training to become a canine dog. But I guess you just can't be any old German Shepherd puppy and show it to be a canine dog. He's got rigorous days of training ahead of him. Right. What's the deal?
I'm not a big, you know, I don't know. He's a cute.
He's in his bulletproof vest.
Yeah, he's
wait, there's something going on here. Why are you shaking your head? You don't like these dogs?
No, I love the dogs. I love Shepherds. They're great dogs, you know, and hopefully, you know, we'll train them up. And, you know, Canine Unit does a great job. We train dogs from all over the state. We get probably the most top-notch canine unit, and it's a cute, you know.
No, but wait, there's something else going on here. People can't see your face. What's the backstory here, Commissioner?
No, I just
you have a
like
problem
dogs.
With a dog when you're running somewhere.
No, like German Shepherds.
No, I got a dog who's crazy, who loves to chase squirrels at home, and you know, I had a black lab for 15 years ran with me, and I tell you, it was the best dog you ever want. I used to do 50 miles. I'd go from South Boston line to Charles. And that dog would be stride for stride with me. So
wait a minute. Until he was how old? 15 is a long time for a lab to live.
I ended up going to the vet, and the dog developed arthritis in his before I did, unfortunately. So I had to stop running with my dog.
Oh,
but
it's a happy ending.
It was, Peppa, unfortunately, I'm a big dog lover.
Yeah.
You know, I lost her in October, and my daughter brought home.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I sort of have a great Pyrenees.
Beautiful.
Sort of a mutt. But she loves to run, so I take her down the park, and she does is like to chase the squirrels. So I've become a big dog.
Yeah, there's something going on here.
That's all I know. Viral, this went viral, apparently. Correct? Yeah. Everybody was going crazy over the story. That's
it's
because
a great
the dog.
Picture.
I didn't make it was a fitting. The bulletproof dog vest does not fit him yet because he's only 9 weeks old.
Right.
But he's going to grow into it if he makes the cut and becomes an official member of the canine.
Nice smile on Marjorie.
Okay. Well, I just he's so cute.
Let's go to Summer in Boston. You're on with the commissioner of the Boston Police Department. That would be Bill Evans. Hi there, Summer.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question on whether the police department's data on stop and frisk in Boston looked at encounters with Latinos, and if so, what did it find? And I'll take my comments off the air.
Thank you, Summer.
Well, it does look at that, but unfortunately, in this particular study, I mean, we can get you those. You know, this was basically geared at, you know, mostly African-American males and being in the community. I can tell you, you know, we put our officers every day where we have the most violence. You know, this summer, as an example, we had 55 recruits, and all 55 went into Dorchester, Mattapan, and Roxbury. So, you know, it's only natural that if you put your policemen where all the hot spots are, and unfortunately, that's where the majority of our African-American community lives, that there's going to be a lot more interactions. And that explains a lot of this data. You know, we have a ton of policemen over there. We have our bicycle unit, our drug units. And so, you know, we're over there. We're going to have more interactions. But it's all about making that community as great a place to live as possible. So as far as Latinos, I can probably get you that information, but this particular one, for the most part, talked about officers' interactions with the African-American community.
Summer, if you call back when the line opens and you leave your number or email address, the police department, the commissioner's office will get it. You know, there's been a story in both papers, Mr. Commissioner, about one of your gang officers allegedly lying to the FBI. I know you're cooperating with authorities. When something like that happens and you say, we're going to ferret this out too, we're going to work with the feds, whatever, where do the men and women who work for you come down? Are they, I know it's hard to generalize, are they happy that you're helping to remove a taint that may trickle down onto them? Or is the feeling that you should always be on the side of the men and women who are working for you?
No, you know, our department is a great department. The men and women work hard every day. I think they respect the fact if someone is messing up and putting their lives in danger and, you know, putting the reputation of our department on the line, they are 100% behind me. Nobody wants a bad cop out there. And I think we do a great job. This is an investigation that was started by us as well as the U.S. attorney here. And so, yeah, we've become very good at weeding out any type of wrongdoing and corruption. And so I think the men and women of this department are 100% behind me to make sure, you know, we have the best department possible.
We're going to get back to the calls in a second. You made an incredibly controversial comment that we got sound of in the last week or so that we'd like you to respond to. Here is the sound. And after you hear it, we'll have the commissioner explain it to us as best he can. Here it is.
And last thing I don't want you serving is gourmet donuts, please. We have enough donut jokes to tell you the truth, so please, something healthy.
Good luck, chefs. We'll see you tomorrow.
So what's your problem with gourmet donuts? What was the occasion for you making this scurrilous comment, Mr. Commissioner? What's the deal?
Well, you know, the big joke is all the cops do is hang in the Dunkin' Donuts.
What's the joke?
Well, you know, I mean, some of us, unfortunately, some cops like to do that. You know what I mean? And when I came
one
in,
of your colleagues is pointing to Margaret, because I'm sure she's written this in her column,
know,
right?
Well,
when I came in, she was eating.
Oh, sorry.
When
okay.
he came in.
Right. So,
shoving it in my mouth.
Right. So, you know, the joke on that was basically, you know, we were honored to be on Top Chef, you know, with the firemen and, you know, Top Chef, you know, they wanted to sort of mix it up and being a little funny. So, I mean, the biggest joke about policemen is, you know, they love donuts and they love to eat. So, you know, that's...
You don't look like you've had a donut in five years. When was the last donut you ate?
I can't recall the last
donut. I knew that.
I'm a bagel guy.
Yeah.
I love to eat bagels. But it was a light moment and, you know, it was a lot of fun being on that show. And, you know, it's sort of, if you're going to make fun of cops, what do you hear? You know, coffee and donut joke. So
yeah, you do. Yeah. You're right with the donuts. I didn't realize until this weekend that my standard old-fashioned donut, is it 320 or 350 calories?
Yeah.
A lot of calories in the old-fashioned donut. You're better off the glaze, calorie speaking.
Okay, let's go to, now that we've cleared that up, I know it was on everybody's mind, let's go to Tyler, and you're in Marion. You're on with the commissioner of the Boston Police, Bill Evans. Hi there, Tyler.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, Commissioner, I just wanted to ask where you think that if you were to install body cameras on your officers, where they, what situations you'd have to use them for? Would it just be when they have to use force or for when they have to arrest somebody? Could you just...
Well, I think obviously any interaction we would have with the public, you know, whether we're involved in a motor vehicle stop, whether we're also out talking to the kids, whether, you know, we're interrogating the kid because we believe he might be carrying a weapon. I think those are the issues that we would want to do them. And again, there's a lot of unknowns here about when do you shut them off? You know, we're involved sometimes in investigations that it won't be great in the intelligence to have them on. And when we go behind people's doors, I mean, there's always obviously the privacy rights. Are you allowed to film inside someone's house when you go in there? And what happens to the evidence that you observe when you're in that house? You know, do you then have to get a search warrant or whatnot? So there's still a lot out there as far as the court's ruling on what's admissible and when we should have them on and when we shouldn't. But I think our main goal, if we went to them, was just to film the daily interactions that have happened more out in the public eye to sort of, you know, use them. So if there's allegations, at least we can say this is how the officer acted. So
Tyler, thanks for the call. I'm sorry. I cut you off.
I was just going to ask, aren't these films that you're having, why does it matter if it's in a private situation? Are you going to be looking at every single day of tape or only when the situation deprives? Because I don't imagine that if you were to go in to have like a civil conversation with somebody that you'd actually need to look at it.
Right.
Well, I can answer your question. Right. I don't want the police coming to my house filming me. I support the concept in general, but I should say I'm not crazy about someone filming me behind my door.
I think that might be a wise idea, actually, just to see what's going on over there.
Tyler,
we can film them on Morrissey Boulevard.
Yeah, that's right.
What would you
do? Wait a minute. Is that a famous reference to the incident where Jim... because Jim couldn't wait in traffic like everybody else, and the Prime Minister of England was coming, made a U-turn, a legal U-turn on
First of all, I was
Boulevard,
acquitted on the illegal U-turn.
Got into a fisticuffs with a state
I did not
trooper
get into fisticuffs.
And wanted me to lie in the district court.
It's the best time the commissioner's had since he's been in our studio, I should say. Commissioner, and one last thing, and by the way, I was acquitted on one charge and I was convicted on the other. In the spirit of full disclosure.
He wrote right over the medium, right?
Okay,
right
fine.
Right over the medium.
Fine.
You know what? Very important man. Hey, I had a lot to do that day.
What would you say are the odds that this camera thing, is it going to happen in some? I understand you're trying to work out details, concerned about a lot of the privacy rights, and obviously also you don't want an additional burden on your men and women. Is this going to happen in some?
Well, I look down the road, Jim. I'm not saying it's going to happen in the next year. Obviously, it's something that would have to work into the budget and whatnot. But I would think every department probably within the next 5 years is probably going to go to them.
Got it.
You know, one last question from me, Commissioner Evans. It was right around 10 years ago when the Red Sox beat the Yankees and they had a lot of the World Series, that there was a big celebration, you know, in the streets of Boston, tons and tons, thousands of college kids. One of them was Victoria Snellgrove, and she was accidentally, when the police fired pepper spray at the crowd, she was 21 years old, Emerson College student. She was killed. There's been a lot of changes since then, some of them lessons of the horrible death of this young woman. What are some of those changes in terms of crowd control? And we didn't win this year, obviously, right, but we're hoping that, you know, for those big kind of situations in Boston.
Unfortunately, in these incidents, you have some takeaways and things you did well and things you didn't. And I think over the years we've done well. I think you're seeing how we handled Occupy Boston, you know, where we never came in with helmets and sticks and tactical gear. You know, the last year on Halloween, actually, is when we basically won the championship last year. I was on Lansdowne Street.
Yeah.
That was my last day as a superintendent in uniform. And we moved crowds unbelievably without helmets and sticks by just gently asking people to move along. And that's more of our style now. You know, I know there's a lot of controversy about Ferguson and whatnot, but we've gotten very good at speaking to the crowd and basically asking them to move along. And, you know, that tactic seems to work a lot better than coming out looking for a fight with having the helmets and sticks on. And I think, you know, out of Victoria Snellgrove, you know, as a father of a daughter that age, my heart still breaks for the family. I know the anniversary is near and dear, and I can't but think they don't wake up every day and think of the, you know, the beautiful daughter Victoria, And, you know, our hearts still go out to them for that tragic day. You know, although we won the championship, I don't think for at least us, the Boston Police, that we felt, you know, the triumph that the rest of the city felt, because we know somehow we were involved in her death. And, you know, I know the city has continually reached out to them. I know Commissioner O'Toole has, who was in charge at that time.
Yeah.
And I know the mayor has, you know. And God bless the mayor. You know, Mayor Menino, a good friend of mine and a mentor, as well as one of my biggest supporters and sort of someone who was always calling me, giving me advice. You know, he's very ill. I all the listeners out there, obviously, I hope they keep him in his prayers. But, you know, he really did a lot for the police department. And, you know, I know after this incident, he was very much involved in reaching out to the family and making sure the city basically did all they could for that family.
Commissioner Evans, thank you so much for your time. As always, we'll see you next month.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans, as Jim just said, joins us every month to take your questions and ours. Sorry to get to all of them. It's great to see you. Up next, big scam on campus. For 20 years, the University of North Carolina had a ghost class where students, many of them athletes, got high marks for tuning in one low-rate paper. Boston Globe sports reporter Shira Springer joins us for that conversation. Next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.